Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
VR training platforms, like the one developed by Fundamental VR and Orbis International, are helping surgeons train over and over before operating on real patients.
As you practice each skill, the muscle memory starts to develop.
Learn more at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee.
Alex, West Coast, Best Coast? Because I remember that when all of this Pac-12 breakup stuff started, somebody texted me, half joking, half not, and I think I relayed it to Stephen Godfrey, our third co-host on the show. Somebody relayed that, like, hey, you should check because Washington State and Oregon State may legally have control of the Pac-12's bank account. And look, it's not that simple, but it's halfway there with what happened last night, Tuesday night, November 14th.
It is. And hello, Stephen Godfrey, to you as well. Glad we're all here today. I am so fascinated by the fight that is unfolding right now between the two remaining members of the Pac-12, which is really the Pac-2 or the Tupac, as some are beginning to call it.
Steven, Tupac's really good.
Steven, you can't yell at me. I didn't come up with it.
Why would I yell? I'm just surprised you two know who Tupac is.
Please. Please. As if I'm not up on current events or past events in that case.
No. Current events? Current events? They just found the guy.
Allegedly. An arrest was made.
Were you guys alive when he was alive?
For like a minute or two. Not for a very long time. Yeah. But anyway, so the Tupac, Washington State and Oregon State won a hearing in Whitman County Superior Court in Washington. And that's obviously in Pullman's neck of the woods against the other 10 Pac-12 schools who are on their way out of the league. And this is not the definitive end of the saga because the Pac-10 side of things is appealing and hoping that the state Supreme Court is going to review this ruling and intervene on their behalf and that there will be more legal fireworks in this case. But for right now, with kind of a tisk-tisking from the judge that says that Washington State and Oregon State need to be fair to the other 10 schools, the important governance of the Pac-12 has been handed over to Oregon State and Washington State. Richard, this is extremely exciting because of all of the, I would say, karmically deserved possibilities here, but also just the weirdness. Could you tell me a bit about what might become of a conference that isn't dead until next summer and that for the next 9-10 months is under the control of two of its members if it does indeed pan out this way?
You know, I actually don't know because I think we're about to get to appeal ball. I mean, I'm sure the other 10 are going to appeal this very, very quickly, and we go into a court fight for the foreseeable future on this. But like, what the two are worried about is that the 10 could just outvote them 10-2 on literally anything. Like, it very much is a rest a locus of control situation. I mean, it really is that clear. Funny enough,
it's funny because they're sort of playing bylaws ball. Washington State and Oregon State's argument, which makes sense to me, is that the Pac-12's bylaws seem to say that if you give notice that you are withdrawing from the league, then you forfeit your board seat. And well, only two of these schools have not given notice that they are leaving, so they control the board. On the other hand, there's some haggling about that because on the one hand, one of the points that the schools have made, the other schools is, you know, what does notice actually mean? Is it meant to apply before you've actually gone? Were these rules ever intended to let remaining schools, perhaps screw over departing schools on their way out the door if they leave the conference. And I think in general, the judge in Whitman County has decided, yes, Oregon State and Washington State, you do have control and you can mostly do what you want within certain unspecified boundaries of fairness. But what I'm excited about here again is like that this could get pretty weird. There's a thought process here by a lot of people who have watched this case closely that Oregon State and Washington State want to take all of this current year's money for the conference and distribute it to themselves, which is hilarious. And the lawyer for the University of Washington might be, I guess, making somewhat of a point when they say that this is not quote unquote fair that Washington State and Oregon State might do this. But I'm not really sure, Godfrey, that fairness is the lens that the other 10 schools want to play by in this case.
Yeah. Fairness didn't seem to matter until 5 seconds ago when we started talking about writing checks. Because fairness was not the standard operating procedure for the Los Angeles schools to leave for the Big Ten. Fairness was certainly not the theme of the day when the rest of the schools went scrambling for various lifeboats. And in researching and the next segment, I still just had to squint and stop and pinch my, like, you know, when you're like stressed out and you just do one of these, like we have an ACC schedule next year with Cal and Stanford on it. Okay. So logic, let alone fairness, was never the order of the day. So, I don't know. I think everyone knows where I'm going to come down on this one, which is that I think that those two schools should split the pot evenly and or maybe somehow slice off some insane small parcel for the remaining schools and then they can divide it amongst themselves. They chased money, right? They chased money. That's what they did. So why can't Wazoo and Oregon State chase money?
Easily the funniest way forward here is that. And it's also like you talk about fairness. It also was not entirely fair when 12 schools were about to hop on a Zoom call, expecting Oregon and Washington to also hop on that Zoom call. And then Oregon and Washington called George Kliavka 5 minutes before the meeting and said, sorry. Like, so yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Fairness
this
ain't
is hilarious, man.
Fairness has not been the
this
thing
is
here.
Great.
There is maybe a sort of middle route here where, and this is my guess, is that this is what's going to wind up happening, where Oregon State and Washington State sort of again get slapped on the wrist by the judge and says, you be nice, you give these schools a decent revenue share, something that, you know, resembles the revenue
decent
shares that they've gotten in past years.
Yeah.
But that Oregon State and Washington State do get control of the Pac-12's more static assets, things like the Pac-12 networks, infrastructure, things like the bowl agreements, the board
real
seats,
estate.
Real estate. Hey, Larry Scott got him all that valuable real estate.
Valuable is in the eye of the whole.
I'm half kidding. Expensive.
No, I mean, like even with the swoon in San Francisco or whatever, like alarmist thing you're reading about San Francisco, they own a stupid. It's a big old chunk that lease is still running on, and so they get to do with it what they want.
But if you
right
own,
across from the Giant Stadium,
if you own the Pac-12 and you own like the Pac-12 name brand, that's a much more valuable name brand than the Mountain West, so you could do something like a reverse merger with those schools. Obviously, George Kliavkov is not going to be in charge of that league. By the way, he continues to draw a paycheck to do discernibly nothing, which is amazing. Like, that guy has one of the great jobs in the world, just to like absolutely faceplant, fail to do the one thing. It was really like a you had one job situation. The job was not done, and he continues to draw what I am sure is a seven-figure annual salary to lead this husk of a league in its final days. And the Pac-12's lawyers have just been sitting like in the middle of this hearing, like the conference office's lawyers, just like essentially doing the legal equivalent of twiddling their thumbs and wondering what they're doing here, because they're trying to claim that they don't have a side in this fight. It's really weird. This is one of the most bizarre court fights that I think I've ever seen in college sports between these, between conference mates, conference adversaries, anybody. And it's a good lesson in why, if you want to screw over schools on your way out of the conference, which I think the Pac-10 schools do want to do, I think they want to basically bleed the accounts dry, dissolve the league, and go, then you should have remembered to change the bylaws before you all left.
One correction real fast, because I knew when I was making the bit or doing the bit that it wasn't, they are not in San Francisco anymore. I don't know if we should credit Kliavkov specifically. I'm kind of scared.
They moved their stuff inland, right?
They moved to a giant business park slash shopping center. They have 42,000 square feet of space in the East Bay in San Ramon. Two words, guys, laser tag, just a lot of laser tag. That's a huge space. Just play laser tag.
We're going to see what happens in the next year with the remnants of the Pac-12. It does seem to me like the natural path forward here within, let's say, 2 years is for Oregon State and Washington State to be in a league with Boise State and most of the current Mountain West. The thing that's going to be a bit of a role reversal, by the way, and this is definitely coming down the pike, Stephen, is that like when Washington State and Oregon State team up with Boise and probably San Diego State and the other Tony or Mountain West brands that are out there, like some schools are going to get screwed.
Specific question.
Like, is Hawaii going to be invited to play in this new thing? Like, let me
put a pin in this, because this is happening at the exact same time that there's a not so sneaky effort to reduce the amount of conference champions that will be in the next playoff format. So right now there's an issue between the 6-6 and the 5-7 format. So if the 12-team college football playoff started this week, you would have six conference champions that would automatically qualify. If you do the math real fast, what that includes is what we used to call the Power Five, which is now just one of those conferences is just two teams, plus the highest ranked champion of, you know, shout out to Mike Oresko, the Power Six, you know, whatever that champion is. However, it looks like there's going to be a unanimous vote to change that to a 5-7 format. Now, if you kept the 6-6, you could see where that was headed. The 5-7 format is what Greg Sankey is pushing the hardest, and he's been the most vocal about, because as it stands, they applied all the previous playoff rubric to this. There would have been 1 year, and this is where it gets a little ironical, there would have been 1 year under the 6-6 format that you would have actually had two G5 champions in over a what we used to call P5 champion at the expense of the Pac-12. You would have had 1 year. It was the year, 2 years ago, my brain is fried, Cincinnati went to the playoff. Under the 12-team format as it stands, you would have also had Coastal Carolina in that playoff at the expense of whoever won the Pac-12 that year. I think it was USC or Utah. I can't remember. They are fiercely fighting that. I can rail on the power commissioners for fighting that, but like, I get it. You're protecting your interests. Yes, Alex.
So just to be clear, there's not an outcome on the table, or is there, where in the 2024 12-team playoff, Oregon State and Washington State in a two-team conference are fighting for a playoff bid?
You have to have eight teams now. And when it goes to five, what they're essentially doing is what they're saying is there's four power conferences, wink, wink, but we're not saying that. We're not saying that, of course. We would never say that there's a power four of the ACC, the Big 12, and then the real power two. And then there's that extra little lanyap that we're giving to the peasants. What they're saying, we don't want to admit any of that. But what they're saying essentially is, even if you flex up with six, let's just say you grab the six best Mountain West programs, you guys, like, we can do it real fast. Boise, San Diego State, maybe you get Colorado State because of the money, I guess. Like, I don't want to cut the baby in half right now. But let's just say you take those six Mountain West schools, you create a conference of eight. What that vote will essentially do, without saying it, and this is one of the things that college football excels at when they push smaller schools down, is that you are the same as the American, you are the same as Conference USA, you are the same as Sun Belt and MAC, and so on. That's essentially what's going to happen here. So this fun idea that we're going to have a Pac-2, or like, you know, Oregon State and Wazoo have some sort of inside track to a playoff bid, that's they've already basically been relegated to the lower tier.
But it couldn't be that for the last year of the playoffs TV deal, that group of eight gets that there are two effectively group of six or group of five, whatever, berths for that one.
They're fighting
because
they're
going to change this, because you can't get away with
Something good. Sankey and the SEC have been the most vocal ones. Obviously, the entire reason that there's a 12-team playoff is to basically, you know, coddle the Big Ten and the SEC specifically. They want more of their teams in the playoff. We can get into that. I get it. It's good for, ostensibly, it's good for business. They don't want to create a more democratic or representative format for college football. What they want is the years that, like, Alabama gets pushed aside and then they vaporize somebody in a meaningless Sugar Bowl. They just want that Alabama team to get back in. They want, as long as there is an expanded playoff past four, there will only ever be, in my opinion, one sort of like a, I don't know what you want to call it, kind of pat on the head spot, right? If it was Air Force before they lost to Army, I think it's like Tulane right now. They'll never go past that. They will always create a sacrificial lamb there. Because, like, they didn't expand the playoff to represent college football. They expanded the playoff to represent the Big Ten and the SEC.
Maybe there could be a crazy year.
I'm not trying to.
What's that, Alex?
There could be a crazy year where two teams get into the top 12. But, Richard, go ahead.
It's not impossible because they're not. So it is highest ranked conference champions. It's just made to be, just like the previous four-team format was, it's made to be incredibly unlikely.
No, or at large. But yes, I agree that there are not a lot, and there are not a lot of years you could check this where two non-power schools get into the top 12.
Yeah, but I mean, we can do this real fast. Or at large, but you're never going to have the strength of schedule. You're never going to have the committee's favor because you're clamping down and increasing conference games because conferences are getting bigger. So it's going to be harder for the outside teams to make a stink nationally. Like, this is not going to look like college basketball. It's not. It's not. You're not going to have those fun moments with Butler and stuff. You're going to drag out a team like UTSA or something in the future and make sure that they get their ass kicked on the road in that first round. And then you can just pat the entire group of five on the head or whatever the hell we're going to call them.
Group of six. The other thing is, like, it's
group of leftover.
Sure. It's not just about, I mean, if you look at the top 12 right now, right? So you would conceivably get in. And I know that applying this current rankings framework to the next is a fool's errand, but for God's sakes.
Yeah.
This top 12, outside of the four, pretend the game's ended tomorrow. Washington, Oregon, so you've got multiple Pac-12 entrants. You got a Texas in there who's not in the SEC yet, but you know what I mean. And then you've got a Louisville. You've got an Oregon State. Like, you've got it, – it's a power four or five party, and you guys know how it's weird to sort of try to call it that. But, like, yeah, they – the only thing they've ever preached with this is participation. Like, the point of this is participation. The expansion to 12 is participation. Who is participating? We can argue about it when we argue about it next year. But it's about getting multiple teams from multiple leagues in. What leagues? Well, you know.
Well, and the other thing, too, that, and maybe, Alex, you can, you know, you're the moderator here, and maybe we just hold up our hand and stop until the offseason. But Richard and I kicked this around last offseason cycle that the 12-team format is going to slow down the coaching carousel, I think, to some degree, because I think the one thing it might reflect basketball in is that if you have A&M's a bad, it's a bad example. I know it's at the front of everyone's mind right now, but it's just such an outlier financially. Well, Michigan State, if Tucker wasn't jerking off or whatever, if you have a playoff appearance, what we think the market is going to say is, okay, well, he took him to the playoff in the last 3 or 4 years. You remember this, Richard? We kind of talked about how that will brook some of the sort of, what's he done for us lately? Screw it, fire him, like college, a 3-year cycle of firing guys.
The college basketball, I don't think it goes this far, but in college basketball, it gets very dumb. It's like, oh, they went 16-12, but he went to the Sweet 16. Oh, hell yeah, yes. Extension. Or hell yeah, higher.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it gets very dumb. I'm not saying we go all I don't say we get that dumb. But, like, I'm saying, like, you just talk about the teams who are still, like, theoretically, like, Oklahoma State is still theoretically in the playoff, the 12-team playoff race.
Yes. Right? All those teams that we've talked about for years that are good and have good identities that aren't going to ever be in a 14 playoff. So, like, Wisconsin or Michigan State or Ole Miss or these teams that are like 9, 10, 11 missed it. Oklahoma State's a great example. I think they've been to like umpteen Sugar Bowls, but like on their good seasons, but they're not going to break that four. The expansion is for them. So, like, this is designed specifically for them. It's not designed for certainly Oregon State and Washington State. It was not, I mean, like, this is, I don't want to repeat myself, but the idea of us having a lot of fun over this is gonna wane pretty quickly, because I think that basically this is the last gasp of these two schools who got screwed because of geography. And one thing I wanted to add, Alex, because I tweeted about this and people thought it was cryptic, and I really didn't mean it to be. Have you guys seen the stats on Arizona?
I was just going to bring this up. I'm so happy you did.
Broke.
I'm happy you brought this up.
They're so broke, y'all. And I tweeted, I said, I'm not in the habit of like kissing ass in the SEC, but Greg Byrne was right. And everyone thought I was being cryptic. I guess every comic book is someone's first, for real. Greg Byrne was the athletic director at Arizona. I have talked about this on the show before and revealed what he said to me off the record, which is that Larry Scott is going to bleed us dry if we're outside of like the privileged class of the Pac-12. So what he was talking about at the time was like, you know, Stanford has its own money. UCLA and USC are going to be fine. Oregon's going to be fine. But if you're a have-not in the Pac-12, you are seriously looking at some terrible consequences. Wazoo's finances, Alex, are in a similar situation. Yeah. I don't know Oregon State's off the top of my head.
Washington's finances are not the rosiest picture of collegiate economics as well,
which is why they're fighting.
Right.
That's what Washington, the University of Washington, I think, is the first to file the appeal because it's in the state of Washington.
Yeah.
Like, this is, it's funny because the two teams, these two rural schools got screwed, and I have a sentimental attachment towards them and all that stuff. But like, a lot of those teams that are leaving who aren't like USC, UCLA, Oregon, they're fucking broke. They need this money, capital N need. Well, this isn't like A&M being like, we're going to shoulder a Bobby Bonilla payment to fit to Jimbo, but you're not going to see it or feel it. Like, this is credit card millionaire shit.
Arizona, like, the Arizona thing is like somebody may go to prison territory.
I don't know about for that. This amount. I haven't heard that, but it's dumb. It's really dumb.
It is Drive Florida.
Tell everyone about the mistake that they made. We hope. I mean, I have no reason to think it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't because
bad.
It wasn't a typical, you know, like everyone knows that there's financial modeling can go horribly awry. You can make bad projections. There can be
a
slippy line of code. But that wasn't
called digital media, boys.
That wasn't
everybody. Everybody who does their own personal finances has, oh, I forgot to put the dinner in. You know, everybody has a whoopsie. Not everybody has a whoopsie that's a quarter of a billion with a B. Like, that's not a oops. That's not a my bad.
The oops specifically, again, it wasn't like a projection error. It was a losing track of how much money they had error, which seems worse. I'm not an auditor.
If you're young.
But it seems
if
worse.
You're young and you're just starting a business or like you have a LLC or whatever, small piece of advice. If you have a receipt, the IRS is probably going to leave you alone. Like, you can claim some wild shit. All right. I'm not going to do this on a recorded show, but I've been there. What you can't do in America is not report income. That's it. That's the number one thing the IRS is looking for. You can receipt your way into some weird, screwed up justification, da 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 da. Like, you know, there's a lot of personal jokes I can make right now. Just report your income correctly. Make sure that you tell the government how much money you're holding on to, and you're 90% of the time going to be okay.
Yeah. I want to put out that I don't think that this seems like intentional financial fraud. It just seems like holy shit, how could this happen?
If you want to put that into the world, that is the opinion of 33.333% of Splits Angle
LLC. Alex, are you defending the institution?
No, not exactly. I'm just saying, so like I write a lot about weird – I write about people doing dumb things with their money or with other people's money. Like, one of my hobby horses for the last year was covering the meltdown of the FTX cryptocurrency exchange and the hedge fund that was attached to it. For which the guy in charge of both just got a significant, just got found guilty on like 7 federal fraud and money laundering charges. And when that blew up like a year ago, I think everyone could stare at it and be like, oh, bro, like he did some crimes right there. And the Southern District of New York demonstrated in very easy fashion that very obvious crimes were committed. Here, it just seems like they fucked up is my honest read of it.
Sure.
Okay, we'll go for it from there.
I definitely think that'll be their party line in court.
I honestly believe that this looks like just an immense error, but hey, I guess we'll see. Maybe this could look extremely bad sometime
Alex
down the line.
Alex Kirshner, tax attorney.
Yeah, that's it. I'm the one who talks to our tax attorney, though. So I learn via osmosis.
Yes, because you're the most nervous one, and that's why we elected you to do that. You're the one who's going to be the most concerned.
Speaking of company business here at Splits and Duo, Substack, splitsandduo.com.
Segue.
Substack. More and more. They're saying it more and more. Substack.
Splits and Duo has moved our premium content from Patreon to Substack. We did it a couple of weeks ago, and the early returns have been great. We've been having a ton of fun using the new features that are available to us there. Had a really enjoyable game day chat during the early games last Saturday that was, we were told, like the biggest chat in Substack's history, and thus had a few technical issues that we do not believe will be repeated and that were resolved by the end of the games. So that was a blast.
We're sorry we electrocuted that one guy.
We do apologize for that. We have gotten into the newsletter game. We're a podcast. We're always going to be a podcast, but the spirit of this show, we think, translates to the written word. I did a mailbag last week. I would expect to get more written stuff in your inboxes this week if you are a subscriber at splitsandduo.com. And also Godfrey is going to record a single wing solo show that will be in your premium feeds via splitsandduo.com very, very soon. Godfrey, before I kick it to you, I want to note that if you were a subscriber on Patreon at the end of last month, you are still getting these episodes and these newsletters in your inbox through this month. You are subscribed through this month. You've already paid. But to continue your subscription beyond December 3rd, you will need to just re-enter your payment information. It takes 5-10 seconds at splitsandduo.com/subscribe. If you sign up now, you will not be billed if you were previously a Patreon subscriber until that comp period runs out in early December. So do that. Make sure you don't lose access come another very busy time of the college football year.
I think I'm going to talk about the SEC on my show.
Finally.
Not in a negative way.
I've been waiting 4 years for this.
Can't stop thinking about, I don't know. I'm going to tease it up, but it's been a minute since I've single winged verb. I would also maybe just, not to be cryptic here, but it's that season where Richard and I will be texting each other while we're on the phone with each other. So we are definitely going to have some eyes list action. I think we'll probably do a full eyes list refresh next week-ish.
Yeah, pre-Thanksgiving, before the holiday. Sometime before
next Thanksgiving. Yeah, this is the game that moves as you play. So this is like, we're going to just kind of have to peg down a time and just do it as we go. But you guys want a mea culpa real fast before we go to the next segment? That all, I think,
is
all
it
three
Maya?
Of us
hold
got,
on.
Got to
hold a, on. Hold on. Hold on.
It's Maya.
It Maya. Maya or Mia?
It's Maya. I'm just, Maya. I'm a redneck. Maya. Yeah, honestly, that's just me not hitting it, the pronunciation correctly. As a lot of people, when they listen to the show or they meet us or whatever, they're like, oh, you're from Georgia. You don't ever sound like it. Sometimes I can't. I've tamped down my accent for a long time. And so sometimes my vowels will jump in and out. But I have been traveling a lot lately and trying not to betray my accent in a very flat way. So sorry. It is mea culpa. Thank you, Richard.
My Latin's a little rusty.
Bet. I'm saying bet for a reason we can't explain yet. Mea culpa. We got to a point like 10 days ago where the three of us in a staff meeting were like, this might be a dry one. This might be a slow season.
No. This is what happened because we're sort of like, you know, what's happening with the carousel? Nothing's happening with the carousel. Nothing's happening with the carousel.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it got to that point where we were like, I don't know, maybe A&M just won't do it, right? And then a magical Sunday morning occurs.
We just, we didn't have a big bang. Like, I don't want to get into it too much and drag the show down, but we didn't have a big bang. We got a big bang. We got, and guess what? I don't know if it's the only one. I really don't. It's good, dumb phone season. It's good, dumb. Sources can confirm to this talk radio show in a sub-200 market on an AM station like that this coach is definitely leaving the Dallas Cowboys to go to a Big 12 school. Like, it is it's what I love,
it's going to be a very good time. to be subscribed for our premium stuff, splitzoneduo.com. Also, by the way, we apologize to those who listen to this show on Google Podcasts. Google Podcasts messed something up with our feeds. They're trying to fix it. If you found this episode, then you found it somewhere else, but hopefully that will be fixed in very short order. Also want to say a hearty thank you to our friends at Home Field Apparel. I am wearing a new Home Field long sleeve tee, a light up Sanford.
Doing fit checks.
Georgia Bulldogs tee. Godfrey's got
Georgia Southern. I'm wearing the sweatshirt of the actual University of the State of Georgia, because at least this one. Oh, no, I can't even do that bit anyway. So at least this one can beat Florida. Boy, that joke is very outdated. Sorry, Richard.
Yeah, so can everybody else.
They beat Florida first. How about that?
Yeah. Sure. We'll go with that. Go to homefieldapparel.com.
Got Muschamp fired. You're welcome.
Use the promo code SCD20. That's SCD20 for 20% off your first order. You can browse catalogs of many, many dozens of schools and get carefully made, premium, vintage, officially licensed collegiate apparel from the best in the business to do it. Do that at homefieldapparel.com. Thanks so much to them for their longstanding partnership. Fellas, that concludes podcast business for this week. Godfrey, You have organized a different kind of tasting menu this week.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but when the show first started, when SCD first started, the tasting menu was designed to do like, here are the games you know you're going to watch. And then the tasting menu was supposed to be like, watch this up and coming coach or this program does something interesting. And then slowly over time, I think we just kind of mashed it all together as we were rushing along. And the tasting menu just became, here are the football games this week. Boys, or I should say listeners, because you... You guys already know where this is going, so oh fuck me. Okay, so here's the deal. It is a bad week. This is a real bad week, guys. This is bad by my standards, not by Richard. You know, Richard's the elitist, right? He wants to watch the home games. And the superior talent.
It's bad by my standards.
No. I know it's. I mean, it's definitely bad.
We
by
know
your
that.
Standards.
Trust me. No one was confused
as a dirtbag sicko. It's not good. I mentioned this briefly on social as we were getting the show together, and I want to shout out every one of you that like quote tweeted, DM'd, whatever, and they were like, every week with college football is a good week. And I was like, you know what? I like that. That should always be the guiding light of this program. Now, here's the problem though. Here's my issue. It's not that it's a weird week. It's not, because I'm going to get you to some games that I think are worth watching. Like, if you want to spend all day on the couch Saturday and watching college football, you can do it, definitely. And I will Sherpa you along to those bed sores. But the problem here is that I don't think it had to be this bad. I'm not, believe it or not, anti-marquee. I want the buffet. We talk about this, right? I want the marquee game. I want the weird game. I want the anxiety bowl. I want the up-and-coming stuff. There is a serious lack of star power at the top of college football this week, and this is really the problem. I want to identify some stuff because there's a slate of games we're going to do first that we're going to be the game, like a collection of those games back in August when we looked at the schedule in August. And what I did this week was I pulled up the top 15 AP preseason, and those teams that we thought were going to be the 15 best teams in college football in August, and then I looked at their opponents this week. This thing was kind of always destined to fail. We're going to get into the SoCon of it all in just a second. But
they tried, though. And we'll get to it.
What's that?
I think they tried to an extent on this week. We'll get to it, but I think they tried.
Because these games that were supposed to be better and just aren't, this is stuff you can't control, right? So I want to. We'll go ahead and start real fast. At 11 a.m. on the SEC Network, you have Southern Miss and Mississippi State. And I know you're kind of rolling your eyes at this automatically. When this game got scheduled, Mike Leach was alive. Will Hall had just taken over Southern Miss and was a native. He's from Amory, Mississippi, which is basically like the back door of the Golden Triangle, Starkville sort of like territory of Mississippi State. This was going to be a huge game. Southern Miss was in a good direction. Mississippi State was in a good direction. Boys, not so much.
Well,
this game
though,
is ass.
Well, Stephen, look, I don't expect this. They are underdogs, but Southern Miss could go ahead and win this game. I want to put that out there.
If they did, then
Mississippi State might have to fire the interim coach and get an interim for the Egg Bowl. Southern Miss has better vibes right now. They beat Louisiana.
Way better vibes. Alex, what's their record? They have better vibes. What's their record?
3-7. But they beat Louisiana on the road the other week. Louisiana is a perfectly average to above average Sun Belt program right now that has in the recent past contended for this league.
I think you can say that for one more year.
We'll see. We'll see. Vibes are improving, and vibes don't seem great at Mississippi State. Before you move on, Godfrey, can I ask you a question?
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, because I want to talk about these two teams specifically. Do you guys take any issue with how Mississippi State treated Zach Arnett in terms of the one and done?
No, because that's split how the contract
was. Splitzoneduo.com. That's exactly what I'm going to lead with this week on the single wing. Thank you for plugging it, Alex. I haven't told the boys what I'm doing yet.
I didn't know.
There are perfectly good explanations for it. Go Richard? Ahead.
Yeah, no, and we'll talk about this, at length on the Substack page. But yeah, I mean, it was an interim contract, and it was an interim contract. It was a prove it year, and he erred in a certain way. He managed his prove it year, and we will talk about it on Substack.
So, Alex, I was kind of obsessed with that idea because on the surface, I think we're supposed to say, this is ridiculous. What are we like? Where are we headed? But that's what I really want to get into the meat of that, because there's a couple mitigating factors and there's really no hero in this story, in my opinion. I also wouldn't feel too bad for Mr. Arnett in the future job market. I'll leave it at that. Let's go to the 230. Richard, North Carolina and Clemson. This was, again, when you looked in August, North Carolina was a promising offensive entity in August when we were going into the season. We assumed Clemson, we were talking about a Heisman hopeful quarterback at Clemson. They were going to rebound from the offseason last year. This was going to be a marquee game, but both parties kind of fucked this one up.
Yeah, this is on both ends. North Carolina obviously lost a lot of steam and, you know, Clemson. The ball was dropped here. This was supposed to be the second or third marquee game in the ACC, right? I think that's fair. When I say they tried.
About the season?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I say they tried with this week, this game and another game we'll talk about. They did try. It's not their fault. Some bargains were not held up on a couple different ends.
Yeah.
Yes, I would agree. This is just an issue of some things we can get into later about Clemson. I think North Carolina has become a reliable brand of unreliability, and they're always going to have something interesting and dynamic on offense. And then they are always going to find a way to pull off like a vintage jackass stunt on defense as the season. They're not Maryland level in terms of implosion, Alex, but they are a brand defining level of defense that falls off a cliff right when you start to buy in.
I don't know what you're talking about with Maryland implosion. We're hosting the Fox pregame show on Saturday, so clearly this season is true. Has
big
gone
moon Saturday,
well.
Baby. Baylor, TCU. This one's pretty self-explanatory. Do we need to dwell on this? TCU. I'll give a little bit more of a benefit of the doubt too, because again, you rolled over an entire roster after overachieving your ass off. Which, by the way, I'm not saying that as a slight. Like TCU's season last year was awesome to watch. I have no problem with them going to the national title game. What happened. Baylor, on the other hand, is the one I would blame here. This thing's on ESPN Plus, guys. The rivalry is on ESPN Plus, and I know both schools hate it when I use that word. Richard, Georgia, Tennessee. Ready to say, like, this is just, I guess, blame Missouri. I had to run to the store last Saturday, and I picked up the Tennessee radio call in like the late fourth as I got in my wife's car, just like go run an errand. It was low.
Well, they got beaten up.
No, but I mean, like, the idea of where I just got done, like, crediting Heupel for establishing a level of brand consistency that Tennessee hasn't seen in so long. This was that one brain fart game of the entire year. Like, people here are still convinced that Greg Sankey helped Alabama and the refs win that game. I'm trying to get their other losses this year. I'm letting you know where Big Orange is at. I live among it, okay? Yeah. So there was not really an absolute just like bang your head against the wall loss or something that would assail the integrity of what Heupel has done until last week. It was suitable for them to lose to Mizzou.
They lost by 30 points. They got killed. I'm just saying Mizzou might win a New Year's bowl game this year. That's all
I'm
saying.
I understand that, but yeah, you're Tennessee. They're Missouri. And I'm not saying that means you walk over them. I'm saying that means you don't lose to them by 30 points. That's they beat fair. That team by 60.
You are right.
Yeah.
You are right
for three quarters.
You are both right. Yes. There is never a good time to lose by 30 to Mizzou if you're Tennessee. Fair.
Guys, I look. I know you guys have done the bit on the hurry up. I mean, it's become form and factor. But I watched the first two quarters of the Ole Miss Georgia game. Like, we are all expecting an incredibly beautiful 1 minute and 15 second drive for the Vols to come out this weekend, Richard. And then what?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Tennessee will win the first quarter and a half, and then they will lose. I like
they will be up 14-7.
No, they won't.
Yes, and then they will lose. So Tennessee, a couple of things here that sort of unpack this game. When I say they tried, the SEC, they tried. This was the game of the year last year. It was a top five matchup in Athens. Whether Tennessee was going to hold up its end of the bargain or not, you can quibble, but like, this was supposed to be the SEC East championship game on paper before the season started. Obviously, it is not. This week, we joked about SoCon Challenge Week. We know what this week in the SEC typically is. In the Big Ten, y'all get your slop over with in September when you play a bunch of not FCS teams, but MAC, so FCS adjacent. In the SEC, the way we do it around these parts, I'm still down there. The way we do it around these parts is soften the blow of rivalry weekend by cupcake cream puff the week before rivalry week.
Well,
this has been an issue for a long time, how bad this week is. So the SEC has, in a couple different ways, started to add a couple more conference games. And I remember when the schedule came out and I saw Georgia Tennessee on this week and I thought, damn, all right, they listen.
Richard, who do those teams play?
Thank you,
Steven.
Thank you.
So I
exactly. So you're trying to you're doing laundry for the SEC office right now.
No, hold on.
It does not take courage to have Georgia play this game before they play Georgia Tech, and have Tennessee play this game before they play Vanderbilt.
You don't get credit for trying
exactly.
And run their twos out there.
Hold on a second, because in the ACC, I'm looking at you, because Florida State gets a week off. Sandwich between Miami and Florida.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
We're going to get there. Yes, we're going to get there.
Oh, you know.
Georgia and Tennessee. Look, this was, so for those of you who have forgotten, and I didn't include this in the notes because it doesn't necessarily factor into this specific week. This was a weird adjudicated year for SEC scheduling because they knew that Red River was coming over. They were at the end of a scheduling cycle. They kind of had to do a one-off, which is why you saw a lot of weird games on weird dates this year. Georgia-Auburn was played incredibly early. Ole Miss-LSU was played incredibly early. Those are just the ones I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, Georgia-Auburn gets to move because Kirby whined about it being in November.
Yes. It's a very... This was a weirdly scheduled year. And to that end, to acquit themselves and at least have one piece of plausible deniability on SoCon Challenge, they did move this game. And that is because both schools knew they were going to play Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt, respectively, next week.
But here's the thing, Godfrey. Well, yes. Don't move on here real quick, because we need to talk about the future here. There is a future, we'll see, but there is a future where this can sort of be abetted a little bit, too. So when the SEC fully gets into cahoots with ESPN, they will have full, complete control over setting the whole schedule. You're going to know the game times of more games before next season. That's like a thing that's going to happen. Because obviously they can plan it all, because now ESPN and the SEC Network all have all the games. So there's something to be there. But, you know, we joke about SoCon Challenge and what that week means and all that sort of stuff. Guys, Ross Bjork said on Sunday night that they fired Jimbo Fisher because they're playing Abilene Christian this week.
Yep.
He literally said that.
He didn't say Abilene Christian. He referred to it as the opponent this week. But
we will get there in a second.
But
the last game that probably should have been better. Hang on. Hold your thought. Hold your powder. Last game that probably should have been better in the G5 level was going to be Boise at Utah State. Very self-explanatory. We don't have to linger on this. Boise obviously moving on from their coaching staff. Utah State, low-key massive disappointment since winning the conference 2 years ago. It's kind of a mess. This was going to be one of those G5 determinants. It was something that you could kind of stick in a classic tasting menu way. It's just not there. All right, before we get to the games that I'm trying to like offer up as, you know, like a, I don't know, it's not my fault, I didn't do it, a mea culpa. Richard, give me a minority coordinator of the week.
FCOTW, minority coordinator of the week, minority coach of the week, in an interesting schematic spot. Remember, minority coach of the week is not a pretender predictor of schematic success. It's simply taking a minority coach in a certain spot and saying, huh, that's interesting. Tim Banks, Tennessee's defensive coordinator. You will note, Stephen Godfrey, that he is not Tennessee's co-defensive coordinator. He is Tennessee's defensive coordinator. The co was dropped when he came over from Penn State. And honestly, I think that's sort of a both parties got what they wanted out of the situation. Tim Banks is no longer a co-DC. He's a DC on a good defense, last week aside. And obviously we know what Penn State is doing on defense when they don't play Michigan. Even maybe when they do play Michigan, whatever.
That wasn't the problem.
Yes, that was not the problem. Banks is in an interesting schematic spot, I think, because of what Georgia's offense is. We talked about this on the Sunday show. Georgia's offense with Carson Beck. Carson Beck is an additive to winning. Jesus. Carson Beck is an additive to winning. Excuse me.
All could be true. We don't know. And
Who
cares? Flex.
Get it, young man.
And what I think this Georgia team is just differently balanced. It's differently balanced because it can lean a little bit more on its offense, because its defense is not relatively as strong up the middle as it has been in the last 2 years, and especially as it was in 2021. There is a reality here where this game is something of a track meet adjacent. One of these days, those deep passes are going to hit for Tennessee. I swear. Just like one of these days last year, Spencer Rattler was going to have a day. So we're running out of opportunities here for Tennessee with Joe Milton. But what happens on Saturday if the deep passes hit and we get into something of a relative track meet? I think Carson Beck can bang in that situation, because I think Carson Beck, especially with Brock Bowers,
is being asked to be
a real boy here in this offense. And being asked to be a real quarterback, and it's interesting to see how he develops over the course, or has developed over the course of the season, and especially as we head into a potential playoff spot for Georgia.
You know how when you look at old photos, like people your age in a different time they don't look like your age. Carson Beck, if you just put like a picture of him in sepia, he would look exactly like some kid in the trench in World War I. It's the weirdest thing. Every time I look at him, I'm like, he looks like he's 45, and I'm 42. All right, let's move on to games that actually have some interest, potentially. I'm going to try and sell you on some of these. Louisville is, you know, in the playoff hunt, full sentence, technically, right? So they're going to play at Miami. That one's self-explanatory. That's just a football game that has technical playoff relevance that's going to be at 11 a.m. All right, I know, I got that sentence out because I feel like they are the most ignored team on the top end of college football right now. I remain wary. I watched the first three quarters, I think, of the Virginia game last Thursday, where like, oh, I'm watching the bubble burst right now. Mm-hmm. By the way, like Virginia is like low key kamikaze. The bubble, like, they fucked shit up.
The bubble kind of bursted on Louisville when they lost to a Pitt team that's going to go 3-9 or 2-10, but they are still alive.
Yeah, they're not going to go to the playoff. Yeah. I just meant like their logo shows up. So it's, like, we'll give them. Yeah.
They are alive, which is amazing.
Hey, yeah. And back up on the macro. This is like, again, this is an amazing turnaround for Louisville. They power washed the Scott Satterfield off that fucker fast.
This is the second year in a row this has happened to an ACC team. Because you remember last year we did this with North Carolina. North Carolina was like 9-0, and we were like, there's a mathematical chance, and then.
Very ACC. Alex, tell me about Harvard and Yale. It is on at 11 if you just want to watch like a tradition game.
Absolutely. Harvard's in the driver's seat to win the Ivy League if they can win this game. They already have a share. Remember, the Ivy League does shares. This has resulted in as much as a four-way tie at the top of that conference. How many teams are in the Ivy? Only 18.
Stupid nerds.
The Ivy does do the shares regardless of head-to-head tiebreakers, but Harvard wins this game, they would win the conference outright, which is hard to do when you have an 8-team conference where you share titles. So the Crimson, a big opportunity.
Guys, probably weirdly in this segment where we're talking about how there's a paucity of quality, ESPN was handed the greatest parachute ever, and that they can totally justify going to James Madison and doing their weird site of the year for App and James Madison, JMU story. I don't want to completely ignore it. It seems like they might have some momentum to fixing the wrong here. It seems like that could happen. That's a story that game day traditionally would jump on. and sort of champion the little man. However, I tell you what, just to be refreshing here, Alex, you can frame this up about Corvallis. I am not going to go in on them as I normally do. I will let you present the opposing argument about Corvallis.
Look, you could go either way on this. They've been to both of these schools before. Harrisonburg had them in 2015. I think Corvallis had them for an Oregon game around 2010 or so. So it's not a first-time thing for either of them. In my opinion, game day probably is a little scared of going to Corvallis here. Not saying it's why they didn't go, but it introduces the risk of the network being booed. And that doesn't happen.
A lot.
Like, that doesn't happen. That literally never happens unless Corso puts on the wrong mascot head at the end of the show. You were
that's
gonna,
an orchestrated boo. Yeah, that's
you were
yeah,
gonna be putting heat. You were gonna be putting on you were gonna be having to regulate signage. You were gonna definitely have people try to bring in signs in Corvallis that were antagonistic to the network. Godfrey, you and I think even have a little disagreement about this, but it's not a big one. Like, I think that ESPN did not exactly kill the Pac-12. It's very public that ESPN made an offer to the Pac-12 and the dumbass commissioner and president didn't take it, and then the conference died. They wanted more money, but obviously ESPN is not bloodless on its hands here because they were very much involved in the arms race that created it. They did. They absolutely did.
Yeah, they helped kill it. And I've always only said that they helped kill it. I never said that it was their prints alone on the murder weapon.
So I don't think that ESPN would admit it. In fact, I'm sure they wouldn't admit it. But also the Saturday Night Football game is there because it's the best game of the week, with Oregon State playing Washington in a game that Oregon State could win. So,
I can read you excerpts of the email sent to me by the ESPN college publicist. They won't admit it.
I'm sure they will not.
They will yell at you for saying mean things about them saying mean things.
I do think they got very lucky that James Madison is hosting a big game against a respectable Sun Belt opponent this week. They got very lucky.
But it is kind of an game by JMU standards.
I think this
is a parachute.
But they do this, like, I don't think opponent matters for JMU's case, for why they, like, right. This is one of those things where you go because you have the opportunity to go, because this is what people don't also realize about College Game Day, is that College Game Day is a 3-hour infomercial, not just for ESPN. It's a 3-hour infomercial for whatever school they're at. That's the value of it from the school side, and not Alabama and Ohio State. They don't need them. But for a JMU, for everybody else, you know what I mean. That's why game day goes on campus and they say, hey, you need to move that light pole so that we can put our set in. And guess what? That light pole moves.
It's gone.
And quick. I was at Kansas last year when game day went
to Kansas.
Is that
an endorsement or a condemnation?
Yeah, it's an endorsement. I went to Kansas last year and I was talking to some folks at Kansas and they were like, obviously everybody knows what Kansas basketball is, but they were like, yeah, man, game day's here. It's a 3-hour infomercial for Kansas football. Before Kansas, we knew what Kansas really was, like Lance Leipold. So look, if you're JMU, you have a party line that you are trying to send to the NCAA, and you have the opportunity to send it on this show on Saturday morning, which I am sure they are going to.
Do you think ESPN is cool with that?
I'm kind of shocked.
Do you think ESPN will hand that up? That's a broadcast partner for a lot of championships.
Yeah, but hold on. If you bring the AD onto the show, which I'm sure they're going to, they're going to get an opportunity. They're going to get an opportunity to talk their shit. Absolutely. I don't think ESPN has a worry there about that. No, it's the story of the day.
Richard, this is actually pretty uncharacteristically anti-NCAA by ESPN.
That doesn't come up often.
No, I'm saying that doesn't come up often. ESPN tries to toe a party line with the NCAA. They'll bring someone on to yell about they brought me on before to yell about the NCAA, but always as a third party. By going to Harrisonburg, they're essentially endorsing this campaign for postseason eligibility.
I don't know about that, but it's going to be that way. Yeah.
To Richard's point, they're bringing 3 hours of attention to something that the NCAA would much rather you pay attention to another game.
I want everybody listening to this podcast to turn to the person in their car, in their living room, at their office, and say, hey, what do you know about James Madison football this year? I'm not making a joke about that. I'm not trying to be an asshole.
No, you're right.
Like,
you're totally
right. And then have, and then ask them on Monday morning, because they will know about this NCAA thing because it happened on College Game Day.
Boys, moving on. Brawl of the Wild. This is probably the biggest Brawl of the Wild ever. I forgot to DM Kevin KVV and ask him. He would know.
Kevin Van Balkenburg, he would know. Montana.
Sorry.
Man.
Shout out Kevin. KVV.
Yeah.
I got him on an acronym. That's just how it is.
Great guy.
He played at Montana, right?
Great guy.
Montana State.
Great golf partner. I'm gonna piss him off. Love that guy. Now. Love KVV.
But he played at Montana, not Montana State, right?
I forget. He's a Montana man.
I've done horrible.
Jeez, you're going to get us in trouble with a friend. This is terrible. Move on.
Well, I don't golf, so. Anyways, I'm pretty sure KVV played at Montana. Anyway, this is the first time these teams have met in the regular season, and both are in the top five. The winner of this game, by the way, if you've just never seen a Brawl of the Wild,
it was Montana.
It is one of the most beautiful settings, and you don't need the snow. This is not one of those weird snow hype games where
didn't
it's like
college game day
a
go
shitty
last
Mac
year?
Game is snowing. They, I think it was before then.
Okay.
It's not one of those things where it's like, oh, it's snowing in Toledo on a Tuesday, so that makes a bad football game. Or no. Toledo is a bad example. They're a good team. This is just a legit, beautiful, amazing setting for a college football game. These teams are both in the top five in the FCS rankings. The winner of this will likely get the 2 seed in the playoffs. The winner of this will, I believe, and I kind of had to do the math on Big Sky, like I believe they should have the inroad to the conference championship. This is a legit, interesting, fun football game. It's a heated rivalry. It's nasty. It's definitely worth checking out I also think JMU is going to route app. So if you really are just like kind of bored and flipping around, check this game out on Plus. It matters a shit ton. A game that kind of matters. This is what I'm kind of soft selling you guys down I-81 from game day. This is why it's on here. I'm just going to go ahead and admit my bias. For the first time in a long time, for the first time in forever, as a man who has to listen to the Frozen soundtrack on loop, Virginia Tech might have like a little bit of a bump back in the home crowd. A little bit of like Inner Sandman is actually going to be going to have some bass to it, because Virginia Tech is staring at bowl eligibility. And it seems like I'm not going to throw proof of concept out there yet, because these things are very weird in the post, in the new world of like portal and NIL. You can break apart an emerging team just as fast as you can reinforce them or build them up. But it seems like Brent Pry has a long-term blueprint for repairing the Justin Fuente damage in the Commonwealth. And in the short term, it feels like they're going to have a season where they can get everyone to buy in. Buying in would be beating Dave Doran's NC State team. Buying in would be beating a quality opponent at home in Lane Stadium.
Agreed.
Is that enough of a sell? Or like, no. This is one I kind of didn't run by you guys.
No, I agree. That could be a perfectly fine game to watch. Yeah.
6 p.m. on FS1, Kansas at Kansas State. Or sorry, K-State at Kansas in Lawrence. I shouldn't have to explain this one. I mean, this is, I've been to both stadiums. I've seen both programs. I love it when non-traditional, amazing college football happens. I get it, basketball, whatever. Like, Kansas is legit good. K-State is K-State. I don't know why I need to sell you on this.
No need.
Yeah, man.
Good? You guys good? Okay, yeah, all right. Man. 6:30, the aforementioned, this one's going to be easy. The aforementioned Washington and Oregon State. Washington is just fun to watch. That doesn't mean they're fun to watch a good team. Mm-hmm. They are routinely fun to watch in a, no, there's no safety belts on.
Guys, look, Oregon State is all favored in this game.
I think Oregon State's going to win. Yeah. I think Oregon State's going
to win. Corvallis is going to be unhinged for this. You are going to have umpteen mentions of the litigation. This would be a massive moment for Oregon State as a program for all the obvious reasons. And then how that impacts the national title and the playoff, Florida State fans will be watching. Like, the flip side is that if, and I don't give a rip about the week-to-week stuff, but if Washington wins this game, they'll probably leapfrog Florida State next week.
This is the funniest way the Pac-12 ends. It's finally, after all of that, the last decade plus, we've got two chances at the playoff, two inside track chances at the playoff, and the school we fucked gets to take everybody down with them. Yes, I'm sure there's playoff revenue that everybody misses out on, blah, 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 blah. But forever and ever, amen, if Oregon State gets to say, Washington, we screwed you out of your best shot in a national championship in two decades plus, and or they get to do that to Oregon next week, and or
this
they
is the
get
last
to do
Civil
it,
War.
They get to do it to whatever, you know, constellation of who goes to the Pac-12 championship game after that. Well, that's
also
the perfect situation.
Richard, the only thing that could make it even more Pac-12 is if Washington loses on a botched video review overseen by the Pac-12 office.
As far as I know, just to jump ahead to next week, we have no future, right, for the Apple Cup or Civil War. No,
well, the so I think it's a little, it's sort of one of those like Bedlam A&M Texas things where like I think Washington has said, hey, we want to play it, and Washington State is like, relax. And I think the Civil War is kind of the same way.
You mean the other way?
No,
wait,
no, no,
did you mean the other?
No, Washington said we want to play it, and Washington State was like, no, you don't just get to do that after you leave. That's the state of play there. Just to be clear about the Pac-12 standings, by the way, Oregon State has two losses. Washington obviously has none, and Oregon has one in conference play. So Oregon State
hold
needs
that
to
thought.
Beat Oregon oh. to go to the Pac-12 championship game next week.
Hold that thought about those games, because I do have an explanation coming up for that. Last one on this thing that I'm trying to foist upon y'all in the 6:30 slot. Nebraska at Wisconsin. This is a game that's going to be on this week for the foreseeable future, on this low bad week in future schedules, at least on the 24 Big Ten schedule. This could be an interesting game to watch for a couple reasons. Like, one, Wisconsin has had their troubles in year one with Luke Fickell. I have not watched Wisconsin play. I don't know, boys, you guys do the hurry up. How can we make Phil Longo jokes? Is that the problem? Is
yeah,
it just a roster transition year? Like, where am I at on that?
Roster transition. They're building it for
okay,
the
that's fine. That's fine. That's
team,
fine.
Not the present. I'm not worried.
But that's fine. I agree with Richard.
We are also.
But it's ahead. Been bad enough. Like, I expected actually a little slow improvement this year. Yeah, you can make jokes. I mean, I'm not saying they need to abort okay. the experiment, but it's.
Right.
You can make jokes. I mean, it hasn't been good. Braylon Allen getting hurt didn't help.
My drive for the Huskers to come to Nashville and hang out with me for the Music City Bowl, still alive. Looking good. Nebraska's kind of having the Matt Rule year. They're kind of having that thing. Like,
yeah.
It's never sexy, but it's
there is discernible. I hope that they find bowl eligibility in these next 2 weeks against Wisconsin and Iowa. It would be nice. I think the fan
find bowl eligibility like it's finding Christ.
Well, the thing is, they really should have had it at home against Maryland last week. Just a Maryland team in free fall, but they couldn't stop giving the ball to Maryland. And Maryland ultimately won the game on a chip shot field goal. The reason I hope Nebraska makes a bowl is that I have a soft spot for that. I think I've realized recently through doing like the Nebraska dead letters and just through like hanging out with some Nebraska fans at their opener this year. I think I have a soft spot for Nebraska. I think it's developed for me. I just have to disclose that. And I apologize for that. I don't, you know.
You don't have to apologize. Go Huskers. So why did we just have this prolonged sort of like strained tasting menu? There's a couple of reasons. We'll get into this now. SoCon Saturday, just in case you're new here, SoCon Saturday was the joke that was sort of applied to the week before rivalry week in the Southeastern Conference, in which many, many, many powers, usually quote unquote, finger quotes, take off, piss off Nick Saban here, the week by scheduling an FCS team, usually from the SoCon, hence the SoCon Saturday, the SoCon Challenge. This was coined and efforted, if I remember right, by Ohio State Twitter years ago and Big Ten pundits to shit on strength of schedule in the SEC. With that in mind, SoCon Saturday is a real thing. Okay, it's happening right now. So I looked at that top 15, and I'm not going to run down the whole list, but like Bama's playing UT Chattanooga right now. I always want to say it like Mullen does. UT Chattanooga. LSU is playing a Sun Belt team in Georgia State. Of course, they're going to win that game. On and on and on. These are the absence of these teams that you know would normally see or check in on. One thing I want to point out here: the Big Ten gave its three best teams, its biggest brands, technically the week off and stayed in conference play. This is something that does not get any play. I find it very interesting. So,
it also doesn't get any play that Ohio State plays Youngstown in Western Kentucky and Michigan ducks UCLA to play what it played the last 8 weeks.
You can't duck that. You can't do that one without mentioning that Georgia should have played Oklahoma this year.
I understand
Real
that,
fast.
But the Big Ten.
Let me just read the schedule.
Big Ten brands do not get to skate on the SoCon thing. I do not accept.
Michigan
that.
Is playing Maryland this week. That's where Big Noon Saturday is. Sorry, Alex. Ohio State is playing Minnesota, and Penn State is playing Rutgers. That is, if you are looking at a schedule and devising a plan.
Why are you including Penn State among the Big Ten's three best teams?
Yeah, exactly.
Three brands, I said.
Okay. Understood.
Because when they looked in the, because when they were making the schedule, this is why I used the preseason, the August rankings of like, we're going to prognosticate where we're going to be in November. They gave those three schools as much of a benefit of doubt staying in conference play as they physically could have. It just is. One funny side note, in their final swan song year, the Big 12 gave the Red River schools annoying trap road games, but I don't think it's going to matter now. At the time, it was kind of funny. Texas has to go to Iowa State. Oklahoma has to go to BYU. That was as much of a needlesome fuck you as that they could engineer.
Iowa State and BYU are so weird about this Iowa State game.
Please.
Alex, is Iowa State your Memphis inverse?
Go for it. Go for it.
Look. No,
are you about to stump for Iowa State again?
Texas should win. I've said, I don't know how many times I have to say this from the preseason, but I think Texas is going to win the Big 12 and might go to the playoff. I think they're going to win the game, implicit in that. Iowa State is squirrely, man. And like, I thought that they might be on the road to having to fire that guy when they were, 1-3 or something like that at the beginning of the year. After they lost to Ohio and Matt Campbell got physical with a fan or tried to and had to be held back.
It happens.
While leaving.
It happens.
Yeah, but it didn't look great.
No, the funny thing is, Alex,
they're good, and they got a new Purdy at quarterback.
The funny thing is on this is obviously Texas, Quinn Ewers is not 100%. He's playing, but he's not 100%. And they don't have Jonathan Brooks. Like, this is when we talked about it on the Sunday show, bit aside, we talked about this. Like, they've missed some birdie putts, but they haven't had a bogey putt. This is, of course, a bogey putt situation here. It is. I'm mean, you know, bit aside.
It is. It is.
Richard,
Iowa State is
you
tough.
Already explained. Oh God, it's your inverse Memphis, Richard. You've already explained Clemson, North Carolina. Obviously, that was sort of supposed to be the marquee. We also want to shout out Florida State, who, as always, spiritually wants so badly to be in the SEC without ever admitting it. Scheduled the University of North Alabama before they have to go play Florida.
Yes, but they gave them Miami last week. All right, I will let Florida State skate on the allegations because they did play Miami last week, and also Ohio State gets to skate on the allegations early because they played Notre Dame. Remember.
And the last one that we haven't mentioned yet is that Notre Dame was scheduled Wake. And honestly, that would have been like a game, but Wake obviously having a down year relative to what they've done previously. So, Alex, you have one note before we go on about fixing this and we're just diagnosing this.
Well, it's just a symptom of this being a nobody is in charge sport. And the way to think about that is that other sports do not generally do kind of a tactical retreat week right before their last games of competition. They don't do that. I checked around with people. It's not like in the English Premier League. They're like, we're not going to have big games in the second to last match week of the season. It's not like that in baseball. It's not like that in basketball, et cetera. But also, it's just the lack of central authority. Think about it as an entertainment property. Like if you're a big fan of insert TV show here, Game of Thrones was famous for this. Second to last episode of the season is oftentimes like the big episode. Like it's the bloody battle happens in that episode because it is seen as a way to like set up the finale. When you have a central planning thing in your entertainment properties, that's how it works. And I think other sports leagues have taken less overt gestures in that direction, but there's nobody in charge of national college football. Everyone has individual incentives to do the opposite, to get a rest up for the last week rather than to ratchet up the excitement. So you get this.
In some defense there are rules of narrative storytelling where you have to pay certain things off and set certain things up for the finale, the denouement. You want to talk about another pronunciation I just butchered.
Jesus. Even the NFL, though, he's got a point.
You can't completely control it.
Yeah, but NFL sort of kind of does what college does because the NFL jacks week 18 with division games. All the division games are in the end of the season, and so they sort of like do it to where division tiebreak or whatever, so that they can make that Saturday night game the last week of the NFL season a certified somebody's got to win a division thing, and then the Sunday night as well.
Yeah, but like Nance and Romo will be at a banger in the second to last week of the season. Like they will. I haven't looked at the schedule this year, but like, you know,
they will, because I just looked at the schedule and Bengals Chiefs is the second week, second to last week of the season. So
and that's on purpose. And that's on purpose. I mean,
all right. Yeah. So let's look forward on what this situation is going to be. And I don't think it's necessarily going to get any better. We might be having a version of this conversation next season. It's pretty just as meh right now on paper for 24. So 11/23/24 will be the weekend that is pre-rivalry week, pre-Thanksgiving week. We have an extra week just by virtue of the calendar next year in college football. So if you click on the Big Ten schedule, there's two things I want to just kind of point out real fast. They have announced everything for the new Big Ten for the 2024 schedule. Richard, isn't it funny that there is a bye technically right now for both Washington and Oregon on this week? There's a bye right now for Washington and Oregon. Their rivals.
Is it a two bye year?
Yes, it is a two bye. It is a two bye year. So technically, right now, both Oregon and Washington do not have a game scheduled on 11/23/24. Now, if you look at the rest of the schedule, it's exactly what I just told you. So next year, same thing. Power brands basically getting the week off, right? So look at it real fast. Michigan gets Northwestern, Ohio State. You're going to get Indiana. Penn State's going to get Minnesota.
USC gets the Notre Dame thing.
No, they play UCLA this week next year again.
Oh, yes. Yes, you're right.
And there's a bye in place for USC and UCLA, I think, because that might be to preserve Notre Dame scheduling in the future. That's, I think, what that is.
Yeah. And then there's also the thing where when they play it in LA, they play it in November. And when they play it in South Bend, they play it in October because USC got really cold one year back in like the 50s, which is real, by the way. That's what happened.
I will say as a show that's 2/3 very Southern, that is some bullshit. Okay, we don't know the 24 SEC schedule yet, but let's be honest, guys. I'm not going to bet against the SoCon. The SoCon Saturday situation is probably going to persist. If I had to guess right now, Richard, I would guess that the SEC does not expand its conference slate. It just doesn't.
I'm kind of off the narcotic of trying to predict what they're going to do there. I think they're going to go 1 year with it, live it, and then change it the year after. But who the hell knows?
It's possible they do that. I will point out that like plenty of the teams right now in the SEC that are playing shit games this week, like Ole Miss is playing Louisiana Monroe. They had shit opponents earlier this year too. Like this is where the criticism digs in on some of these schools in the SEC, like Ole Miss, Arkansas. I checked a few, like. They front loaded shitty and then they stuck a SoCon game in. I know ULM's not in the SoCon. You get my point. ACC Big 12 schedules are also TBD right now. Just want to point that out. It's going to be harder for them to prognosticate and slot in. I mean, it'll be really interesting to see how the Big 12, one, creates narrative and rivalries, Alex, but two, how they sort of meter those out, because you've got a very, it's a collection of chunks right now. Like you're bringing in the Pac schools, and then you have the old Southwest Conference schools, and then you have your American schools. And then one thing, the last thing I'll point out, not helping this, is that next year Notre Dame has a bye. They're on a bye next year.
They want that because they probably play USC in the last week of the season, if I'm to guess.
I believe so. So it's not great. Alex, the first thing when I started looking for like suggestions on how to fix this, I just immediately am going to look down and look down at the FCS and just say, do we have a rivalry week? The last time I talked about this, or the last time I kind of had this thought, was what do you do with week zero? Week zero is probably going to sort itself out. I think eventually television contracts are going to push into August. But I had also said like, hey, let's do a kickoff challenge and like do some six badass FCS ranked on ranked games. Alex, it is rivalry week, isn't it?
Yeah, because remember, the regular season has to end this week because they start the playoffs.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, Harvard and Yale obviously already talked about that. But also, this is the week of the rivalry. The rivalry. Capital T, capital R. Contested annually on this same weekend. Every year since 1896, with one sort of exception, between Lafayette and Lehigh. Leopards versus Mountain Hawks. Well, not exactly. So they've played every year since 1896.
War, famine.
They didn't play in 2020, technically, but they made it, obviously, because there was no FCS football, but they made it up in the spring season in 2021. So I think we can count it. They played during World War II, when numerous college football rivalries and events went on hold, including obviously like Army and Navy had various interruptions around that time. And it's funny, like the Army-Navy interruption. Army, well, it's actually a more interesting answer than you think.
Because they were winning national titles and a lot of shit.
No, Army and Navy at one point did not play. I forget if this was World War One or World War Two, actually, but they're in, I wish I had it in front of me. But I did research on this one time for a story. Army and Navy took off during one of those conflicts, not because they didn't have enough people, because everyone was deployed or anything like that, but because the Defense Department and the administrations on the campuses were worried that they would get too worked up over this game, that it would detract from their focus in the case that they needed to go and fight. Well,
you also had active – I believe you had active strategic planning for like theaters of war happening at the institutions.
That wasn't why.
That's also why – like that's also why they played that Rose Bowl at Duke Stadium one year, because they were like worried about –
that was security, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were worried about Southern California.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it was the Japanese Air Force was a legitimate threat at the time. I mean, based off what had happened in Pearl Harbor, they were, I mean, we turned into a Michigan Dad podcast
real fast, but
like we were on our heels on the West Coast. Yeah. Okay.
It was other World War One, not two, when Army and Navy interrupted. But point is, just to go back to the rivalry, they have been playing this since 1896. It is the longest uninterrupted rivalry that is played in college football right now. It's 11 Central, ESPN Plus. Lafayette is trying to win the Patriot League this year outright. Lehigh is bad. Could be fun. Check it out.
Here's I want to take the baton for a second, because this is essentially I just replicated this single idea of a suggestion of, okay, do we move the American and Sunbelt rivalries to this week? Because you can't really do that with the MAC. If you're looking as we record this, there were three MAC games last night. I think there's two tonight. I mean, the MAC has its system. Whether or not it's good for the MAC is for another day. I'm not asking for them to give up those weeknight slots, and they won't. And I will point out, yes, the Sun Belt and Conference USA do that, but they also pull it back in November. They only really do that to fill in on the, it's usually like late September to end of October-ish, and then they go back to the Saturday schedule, I think by request, I believe, of the schools that want those traditional Saturday slots as you get towards the end of the season. So do you turn this week into rivalry week? Do you play, you know, App Georgia Southern this week?
Why don't
you play?
Why don't they play on the same weekend every year? They used to play in mid-October. I looked, and it wasn't now, but no more. Now they just play when they play.
I think I have an answer, but I'm not 100%, so I can actually ask the Sun Belt, and I'll do that. That's also one of those disputed rivalry things where it's like you have Texas and A&M, and then you have Red River. It's like Georgia Southern has Georgia State now, but they don't want to claim Georgia State, but it's a thing. You could do this, but here's my problem with this. Just like Lehigh Lafayette, just like Harvard Yale, just like Brawl of the Wild. It's not our job. Like, we can run this podcast, and I always will as long as I'm here, and say, look at the breadth of this sport and look at the interesting narrative. The rights holders have to push this shit, and they don't. If you ask, this is what kind of blows my mind, and I've asked conference commissioners at three different conferences in the G5, why do you just consign yourself to being in the ESPN Plus bin? And there's this herd mentality of, we need to be with ESPN just so that when they do give us some attention, like when we can merit some attention, they'll give it to us. It's like that fear of when the NHL went off of ESPN and ESPN just didn't cover the NHL for the better part of a decade. That's the fear that's so pervasive for these G5s and FCS schools.
And it's not just the G5 and the FCS schools. I think I mentioned this a lot. This was a thing in the Big Ten too. Like, they worry a lot about this.
They still worry about it.
Is this something where Fox could come in and pull up some slack? Is this, does a third party emerge here? The problem right now, as we close this out, there's no incentive whatsoever for ESPN to push these plus games. There's no incentive whatsoever for them to blow this out. They own half of the fucking SEC network. You know what they want you watching? From an ads rights perspective, they want you watching Kentucky and South Carolina this week. They don't give a fuck if you watch Brawl of the Wild. They don't give you a fuck if you watch the rivalry.
Well,
that's the problem.
I agree. Marketing, but I want to walk that out. Why? Because I don't want to assume that everyone thinks about this the same way that I do. I think you're mostly right about that. I don't think they really care about what viewership numbers are on ESPN Plus. I just think they care that you're subscribed because they're losing hundreds of millions of dollars a quarter.
I've talked to two people who work at on programming that is ESPN Plus native, and they will tell you that it is acknowledged inside ESPN how terrible it is to navigate and how if you want to, like, I did it. My parents were in town.
I don't think it's that bad.
The week that Georgia Southern played Georgia State, when you fire up, my parents were in town to visit the grandkids. We like got a bunch of like barbecue. We were going to watch the Georgia Southern game, which is something I don't get to do with my dad. It's fun. Navigating the menu, like you got to effort to get to what you want. If you're looking for G5 or FCS football, right. You got to fucking search for it.
But you
it's dumb.
Yeah, but you know, we know that like they're not worried about the people who are efforting a Georgia Southern whoever game. They're not worried about the people looking for Brawl of the Wild.
They're also not marketing it.
Sure.
They don't. I will say this. Like we all get this. I think all three of us get the same damn press release every week about like ESPN or you'll get one from Fox. You get one from ESPN leads the week in top rated games. Sure. Viewership's never like we get these press releases. Everyone who works in college sports media gets them. You would think there's a way that they could get interested in when you have a wane or a decline in a week like this. To prop up the rest of your inventory. They just don't need to. They don't respect it.
They are going to James Madison this week. I'm guessing that's a plus game.
We just discussed why.
Yes, but.
But they're also going to James Madison.
Yes, once a year.
I think they would see it as that.
They go to HBCU. I think they would see it. Or they go to Bowling Green.
But they would see that as their, and Fox won't even mess with this, in part because Fox somewhat wisely has stayed out of streaming, but Fox wouldn't.
Yeah, Fox ain't going to fuck with any of this because you wouldn't put it on a. Because
why would you have that when you could have Clay sitting there with two people behind him or whatever it is?
I don't know who that is.
Oh, my apologies. Yeah. But yeah, that's the reality. That's the state of play.
It's going to be a great week if you wanted to.